welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. And I'm your host, Mike Allen. Over the years, Connecticut's made quite a few contributions to nautical history. For example, back in the 1700s and 1800s, back when seals and whales were hunted, Connecticut was a big player. The state had the first and oldest ferry boat service in the country, and it's still operating on the Connecticut River. The state made early use of canal boats and steamships, and the state even built and launched the first nuclear-powered submarine, the USS Nautilus. Well, here to tell us about that is Derek Sutton, Lieutenant Commander in the U.S. Navy, and also Director of the Submarine Force Museum and Library in Groton. That's where the Nautilus was retired for the public to tour for free. He's got some great stories to share about the Nautilus and being on a submarine in general. This week's trivia question: this famous figure was initially a pharmacist, but by the end of his career, he would become one of the most detested men ever. Who are we talking about? Well, stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. Yale New Haven Hospital was the very first hospital in Connecticut. They opened their doors 200 years ago and later introduced the entire country to the use of penicillin and chemotherapy. Today, some of the brightest minds in medicine choose to work there, and it's the primary teaching hospital for the prestigious Yale School of Medicine. For more information, log on to ynhhs.org. That's ynhhs.org. Birthed in the Thames River in Groton, Connecticut, is one of the true gems of Connecticut history. There, just floating in the water, but anchored to a dock, is a massive piece of dark green, grayish metal, the USS Nautilus. She weighs 7.5 million pounds. She's slightly longer than a football field. In her day, she carried 116 passengers when she was active, 11 officers and 105 enlisted sailors. Her top speed was 23 miles per hour if you're doing it on land. For the nautically inclined amongst us, that's 20 knots, which, by the way, I'm not. She was the 571st submarine built for the U.S. Navy. However, she was the very first one built to be powered by nuclear energy. And she was built at the Electric Boat Shipyard, about 3 miles away from where she is now, on the same Thames River, a short ride from Long Island Sound. Back when I was in grade school, we took a field trip to see the Nautilus. Now, the tour is free. It's open to the public. You can go on board the submarine, and you get to see what it was like to live and sleep and work and survive on board an underwater sea vessel like that. For me, it was a life-changing experience because I don't do very well with confined spaces. Well, our guest today has no such issues. In fact, he's been around submarines, on them and in them, for 2 decades. U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Derek Sutton is currently on assignment as the director of the Submarine Force Museum and Library in Groton, and that's where you can find the Nautilus. Derek, when I think about Connecticut and all of the incredible history it has and all the amazing things that it has to offer, the USS Nautilus is right near the very top of that list. When I was a kid in elementary school, I remember we took a bus trip to the Nautilus, got to go on board, and it was something I still remember to this day, and I'm retired. I mean, so this was a number of years ago. It's really amazing, and Connecticut can lay claim to it because it sits on its berthing dock there in Groton, Connecticut, near the naval base, and it's just it's an amazing testament to what we did. And when you stop and think, let's just start right here, that, you know, we'd had World War II, we dropped nuclear bombs on Japan, and if I did my math right, it was about 3 years after that that somebody started saying, hey, you know, we could probably use nuclear power on a submarine or a boat or something. And from concept to actually commissioning the Nautilus in 1954, it was just 7 years later, if I have it right. Is that about how it happened?
That is correct. It was about 1947 where they started to talk about conventional or peacetime use of nuclear power.
And what happened in terms of the 7 years of commissioning and or going from concept to commissioning? That sounds like a very fast timetable compared to what projects like that would run today.
It is incredible to think about that timeline. So as we discussed, 1947 is where they really started to dive deep into that project. I believe it was 1950 where they started construction of the S1W reactor core, which was the land-based prototype of the S2W that was actually put onto the Nautilus. And then the Nautilus keel was laid in 1952. So there was a period of time there where the prototype was being constructed at the same time that the ship was being built, and they were both kind of being brought up online around the same time.
That's amazing. And I know that someplace just outside Hartford, they had a training facility that during the Cold War years was secret to most people in Connecticut. People were trained on how to operate this nuclear sub, which is just amazing. I mean, Connecticut played a huge role in this. A lot of people don't know that. Now, it stands to reason that with this power source, that obviously nuclear gives you a lot more time in terms of, you know, as opposed to having to fill up with diesel fuel or some other type of energy source. And the Nautilus quickly set all sorts of records for things like speed and distance and time submerged and all that. Do you have some of the details on that and how much it kind of overtook the previous models?
The biggest initial impact that she had was one of her first, we'll call it a shakedown run, was a trip from here in Groton down to Puerto Rico. And she got underway, she submerged, and she was submerged for about 1,400 miles. And she was submerged for, it was just a little under 90 hours. So she set record for time submerged, distance traveled submerged, and she also locked up the highest average speed over 1 hour on a submerged vessel. And that was all just in one of her initial shakedown runs.
Now, there's a lot of people listening, I'm sure, who have never been in the military and don't understand the significance of what you just said in terms of how remarkable that was compared to what technology we had prior to that. Can you try and characterize just how remarkable that was?
It opened up the entire world as a mission theater. So the diesel boats, by the end of World War II, they had the ability to go overseas. They could be forward deployed, but they had to spend time on the surface. They had to snorkel or run the diesel to recharge the batteries. So there were periods of time where they were, their location was known. With the advent of the nuclear propulsion and being able to get away from anywhere on Earth, submerge, and nobody knows where that ship is. It is a true stealth platform. And when I get underway and once I submerge, you don't know where I am unless I want you to or until it's too late.
Well, that's put appropriately. I know in 1962, in some of the information that I've researched, that the Nautilus was involved in the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I can imagine that kind of stealth activity was critical to John Kennedy and his face-off with Khrushchev at the time. Now, you've been on submarines before. Tell me what life is like on a submarine.
The easiest connection from anybody to a submarine, I liken it to the movie Groundhog Day. Once you get underway and you get settled, you wake up, you stand your watch. When you're done with that, you do paperwork or you do maintenance, you do training, drills, those types of things. And then you sleep. And then you wake up, you go on watch, you do your maintenance, you sleep. It is very, I don't want to say repetitive, but it is an absolute routine. And it does just kind of feel like you're waking up and doing the same thing over and over again.
Now, without getting into obviously anything strategic or specific, roughly, how long does somebody spend underwater in a submarine on a just a typical outing?
It depends on the platform and the mission set. My first submarine that I was on was a ballistic missile submarine. It was the USS Louisiana. and it was a relatively regimented schedule. We would be out to sea for about 3 months, and then we would be in port for about 3 months. My second boat, I did a deployment that was somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 months. But then between those longer deployments, we'll go on shorter trips. So you can go out to sea for a couple of days or just a couple of weeks for different exercises and training and those types of things.
Among the many, many accomplishments that the Nautilus was responsible for was one that I want to talk about, where I think they left from Pearl Harbor on an 1,800-mile trip, and it was the first vessel to go under the North Pole. Can you just explain what that was like? That's just amazing.
So, yes, the USS Nautilus was the first nuclear-powered vessel to reach the North Pole. It was actually over the course of two main attempts. She made her first attempt in 1957, and as they approached the ice, they realized that the ice was too deep and they didn't have enough room to make it in the route that they wanted to go. So they came back, they did a little bit more research, and then picked a different time to depart the following year when the ice would have been a little bit less. So yeah, they did leave from Pearl Harbor for that attempt. And on August 3rd in 1958 is when she reached the North Pole. So the trip to the North Pole, or pushing our submarines to operate underneath the ice, there was a big push for that following the launch of Sputnik. So we were post-World War II. We were in the Cold War. The Russians launched Sputnik, had a huge impact, and it showed that they were on their way to the capability of an intercontinental ballistic missile, or a missile that you could launch from anywhere on Earth to attack anywhere on Earth. And that push to get up under the ice and to the North Pole was a way to show them that, at least in the meantime, I have this capability and I can get to you faster than you can get to me.
Let's talk about the years since the Nautilus has finished her rather remarkable career. I think she went about 26 years of service and finally in 1980 was decommissioned. And a lot has happened since then, people recognizing the importance of the submarine. Could you talk about things such as it being declared a National Historic Landmark? Let's start there. I mean, what exactly does that mean and how important is that?
So, yes, she is known by many names. She has a lot of titles. So she was declared a National Historic Landmark in 1982. She was also declared the official state ship of Connecticut. She is recognized as a nuclear historic landmark by the American Nuclear Society. And right now, as a macro artifact, I like to think the greatest artifact that any of the Navy museums have to offer, she is the only place where the public can walk on board a U.S. nuclear-powered vessel.
So the Nautilus is actually berthed at Groton in the water by a dock where you can drive by and see her, but you can also go to the museum and get on board. Recently, your museum did a $36 million renovation. What exactly did you have to do?
Because she is waterborne, we do have to take her out of the water and put her in a dry dock every once in a while just to check on everything, to make sure that everything is still structurally sound for her to remain in the water. The last one was in 2002, and we came up on the 20-year timeline to do it again. I was very fortunate to have that opportunity. So we put her in a floating dry dock, and we did a full hull blast and paint. So we blasted all the paint off. So took the entire hull, top to bottom, forward to aft, down to bare metal, and then did a full coat of paint on it that protects her from the elements. The Nautilus has a wooden deck topside, which we do not have on our modern submarines. We took all that wooden decking off, and a local company, Mystic Seaport, came down and they replaced all of the topside decking. And then we did some things inside, some lighting upgrades, some electrical distribution upgrades, added some new access points for my staff as far as cleaning and maintenance and those types of things.
How many visitors do you get in a given year?
We see about 100 to 120,000 visitors a year. And in addition to that, we also host many active duty engagements. Last year, we hosted about 120 different events, changes of command ceremonies, retirements, promotions, warfare qualification awards, all those types of things. We keep ourselves busy.
Is there anybody still alive who served on the Nautilus?
Yes, there are several, and there is a Nautilus Alumni Association that is open to anybody that has served on board the USS Nautilus and their family members.
Interesting. One final question, which I just have to ask. So you come to this museum, you're in charge of it, and you drive up and walk in every day, and you see the Nautilus floating there off that dock. What goes through your mind?
She's beautiful. I've been either in submarines or training to be on a submarine for almost 20 years now. And they're amazing to see and to have an in-depth understanding of their capabilities and their mission sets. I mean, it puts a smile on my face every time I drive into work.
That wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. Now, if you're lucky and you're ever driving in eastern Connecticut over the Gold Star Memorial Bridge, which happens to be Connecticut's longest, it connects Groton with New London, and underneath it, if you're lucky, you might just catch a rare glimpse of a submarine being escorted out the Thames River into Long Island Sound. I want to thank our guest for today's program, Derek Sutton, Lieutenant Commander in the U.S. Navy and the Director of the Submarine Force Museum and Library in Groton, where the USS Nautilus is permanently berthed in retirement. The answer to this week's trivia question, well, the question was, this famous figure initially was a pharmacist, but fate would make him a very detested man by the end of his career. And who were we talking about? Well, the answer is Benedict Arnold. Yes, Arnold was born and raised in eastern Connecticut, and next week we're going to tell you about his family backstory, which, if you don't know it, the issues he faced, particularly with his father, well, it might just give you some insight into how he could turn from being one of the country's most brilliant military leaders into a traitor. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe, and please stay healthy. Thank you.